This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello and welcome to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Max Carlin, and I'm joined as always by Jake Rosen. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing well today, Max. Definitely enjoyed part one. I'm looking forward to getting back into it in part two.
And again, we have Henry Ward with us. He is not going to do any kind of intro thing because we're recording this in post. So let's get into the episode.
Yeah, I think the one other issue that kind of crops up then is like, how often can you really acquire these guys, the really high field ones? So there are plenty in every draft, I would say. But you have at most, well, not at most, but you in the natural state have one first and one second a year. If you have the talent to build around, the main guy to build around, you're probably not bad because it's hard to be bad barring, you know, like an injury year with an actual transcendent talent. So you don't have particularly high picks. Your second round pick is not worth very much and is probably not capable of getting this caliber of player in a 4-year window, because that's all that a rookie contract lasts. Can you really get the four guys who can play together? That's not the only avenue to acquiring talent, but can you get enough guys in that window through the draft and then get those guys on the free agent market? Because these are the type of guys that don't come available very often. How feasible is it really to get that in the window that you're actually working with to build a team?
I think it's interesting you say that, because I think, yes, the peak, like the Draymond, Scotty type thinkers are very few and far between. But I do think there's like a general market deficiency or inefficiency in terms of like free agents in this way. And even draft guys, like I was writing, like in our outline, we have some guys who might fit this bill. And I was writing some in, like, you could feasibly pull like three of these guys from this draft, considering like where guys' ranges are. Like if I had a lottery pick, I don't have like Thingathon up, but like, I know, whatever, the Thunder have a million picks. Like, let's say the Thunder have got like a top 10 pick, a later lottery pick, and then 2 seconds. You could pull like...
Yeah, you could do it if you're them, but they have a crazy surplus of picks.
Right, okay, so bad example. Let's say you're, whatever, the Nets, who are picking the late, you know, I'm pretty sure they have like an early second from someone this year. I might be making that up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that might be from the... I'm not sure. I think...
Well, let's just like theoretically make up, like you're a team that's like not great, not horrible. Like you're picking at like 20, and then you're picking at like 45 and 50. I think you could theoretically pull, I mean, it's hard to say now because everyone's so over the place in terms of like how I evaluate players, how you guys evaluate players, and then like what are like quote unquote proxies for how the league's evaluating players are. Like, I have no idea.
We could look to last year, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's actually a good idea. But like for this year, I would say, while I pull that up, I would say like you could walk away with like, you know, let's say you're in a position to get Scotty, and then you could walk away with like Oksar Agbaji and David Johnson, and then I'm like pretty happy with how you turned out. But I also think, going back to what I was saying while pulling up the draft in terms of marketing efficiency, I think a lot of teams aren't thinking this way. And so the inverse is you get a lot of teams opting for like Wiggins, Malik Beasley type players over like, you know, Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal type players. So there are situations where, you know, Marc Gasol's available on a veteran minimum. Jeff Green is like available on nothing. Like, you get good players who aren't like, sure, they're not, you know, I'm not building my team around them, but like you have got to round it out. Like if you're, you know,
theoretically, if they're the weak link, you're okay.
Yeah, you're fine with that. You're more than fine with that. So like looking at, I just pulled up this year's draft or last year's draft. Let's say, you know, I mean, the Kings would be the obvious example because they walked away with Hallie, and that's like, he was the peak of this last year. So the Kings picked at 12, they got Hallie. Obviously any team in front of that could have pulled the same player. I think, you know, it's a little bit tougher also last year because I think generally looking from being reminded that like a lot of these guys fell actually as like top end talents. Like the other ones that pop up are obviously like LaMelo, Pat Will, Okoro, Denny, Vassell, like all those guys went in the top 12. But there are still, you know, like I would be, it's foreseeable that like, who knows what Landry Bolmaro is. But like someone like that, or even like Jaden McDaniels, and then going down, you obviously have like Tillman, Bane, those types of players. So like they're around. And of course shakes out how it shakes out in terms of any given year, how is the rest of consensus going to be a player? That's ultimately what determines where they get picked, not like where you would pick them, obviously. But I don't think it's inconceivable to think that you can walk away from any given draft with like three guys who are like, you know, varied across the top 60 picks and feel good about how all of them fit into this sort of ideology.
Yeah, I think you've convinced me actually that it's pretty feasible from a draft perspective that like you can – yeah, you Henry is fist pumping for the listeners. I think that, yeah, like, assume you have the top end talent in place. Yeah, like getting Halliburton there is pretty crucial to the whole thing working, but you can get the weak link guys who are attaining the level of intelligence that you need while being like functional enough from a skill standpoint.
The wait is finally over. Football is in full effect and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
I don't think you necessarily, the problem you run into, I don't think, is finding the guys to complete the idea and complete the philosophy. It's approaching the draft or the free agency or the trade market with this high field philosophy and getting those stars who you ultimately need to win the championship. I think that's where, because in the draft, you can go all in on this approach and I think you can walk away successful. But this is someone we talked about, obviously Jalen Green is we're going to keep coming back to, but these big time players in the league, like right now, like Bradley Beal and just maybe someone like Devin Booker, that's where you're going to have to swallow your pride a little bit and embrace the margin for error and embrace the leeway and say, okay, we have four other guys to insulate them, or we have a bunch of wings or switchable bigs off the bench and we can make this thing work. But so therefore I'm going to have to go in, I'm going to have to max out, I'm going to have to spend a high draft pick on someone that doesn't necessarily fit my overarching philosophy. I think that is probably a tougher pill and tougher task to achieve rather than just getting the guys that round out the lineup, if that makes sense.
Without a doubt. I think that's the challenge for, like, this is why when, you know, like when PD and I talk about this and PD is like, I just want to take all the wings I can and hope that one sticks, you know, that makes, I can't really, it's hard for me to argue that because you do ultimately need something like that. You do need like a, you know, an outlier, like a Booker, a Jimmy Butler, you know, like one of those situations where you're not invested, you don't have the top pick in the draft, you're not taking Cade, you're not taking Zion, like, and you still luck into a primary somehow. And I say luck into, like, you don't have control over who that is and how you develop them, but, you know, quote unquote, luck into. But I think part of why this philosophy is so attractive to me and why I've like stuck to it so much and I believe in it is because even if you don't, the Heat were so interesting to me last year because even if you don't have this like predetermined top 10, top 15, like stud on ball creator, you can still compete at the highest level if you do everything else right. Like the Heat did everything else right. They obviously, you know, finding guys like Bam at the end of the lottery, Tyler Hero, who TBD how good he's actually going to be, but like obviously it was huge for them in the playoff series. Duncan's a UDFA. You know, you're rolling out guys like, I mean, obviously Jimmy is the crux of this, and Jimmy was like an outlier great development in terms of draft value. But like, even let's just take Jimmy for what he was during the regular season. Like, I don't think anyone was saying that Jimmy Butler was like this, you know, offensive engine on a championship team. So you can sort of like, this is the best way to sort of like fudge it in a certain way. Like, even if you don't strike on like the unabetted, like unparalleled offensive, you know, engine talent that you often need, you can hopefully, if you do everything else perfectly right, manufacture a way to a championship that there, until this day, there's been no other way of doing that. So that's part of the pitch, in my opinion. But just as a little tangent, I know Max wants to say something, but I was kind of looking at Draft Express's like top 100, whatever. So it's like a thought idea of like who you could kind of get in these different pick ranges. And point being is they're all over this board this year. It's like, you know, you have, obviously you have the top three, you got Franz at 9, Scotty at 10, then you get, you know, Giddy at 13, then you got like a pretty big drop off. You have Moody at 21, Zaire at 24, like just laughable, you know, Springer at 28, TSJ at 33, Deuce at 35. Like it just goes on and on. Kessler at 49, David Johnson at 60. Like, what are we doing here? Like these are all lottery picks. But yeah, go ahead, Max.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Heat had all of that. And then end of the game, they did have Jimmy Butler as a fairly undeniable tough shot maker, foul drawer. Like, yeah, it wasn't like a heliocentric offense that ran through Jimmy entirely. But it was pretty central to, I think, to surviving late game in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. You do need that a player to that level. I'm just saying that it's not going to necessarily be, it doesn't always have to be like the LeBron, Luka, Cade-ish sort of like they have everything type player.
Yeah.
You can get closer to manufacturing championship level success with, you're not going to do it without any primary creator. That's not going to happen. But like the primary creator threshold's lower, like pretty significantly lower, I think, when you incorporate this type of system.
Sure. Yeah. That's kind of my last question on feasibility. Jimmy is a good example. Steph's a great example. Like these are guys who are committed and outstanding off-ball players, and they're willing to do it. Trae Young, I think, would probably have the intelligence level to do this, but he doesn't want to play off the ball. And maybe he's an outlier to the other end of the spectrum. I mean, you throw like Harden out there as well, but I do think that there's like a real issue of interpersonal dynamics here of like, what if you tell Steph Curry that this is how we want to play and Steph Curry doesn't want to do that? Like he wants to run 50 pick and rolls a game. I think that that's probably like, especially when you're talking about like, you know, the mindset that it takes to be an elite athlete. I think it probably is fairly common actually that you're not going to have guys who are going to want to buy into like Steph Curry setting big off-ball screens. Like a lot of guys are not going to want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that is 100% something I take into account like draft philosophy wise. And it's ultimately why I like went into like the new year thinking Sharif was like a top 10 pick. And I now don't even know if I'd pick him for that exact reason. Like there is a high level of buy-in that's required. Because it's not what anyone's really been raised on, most likely. It's a change of pace for anybody who's getting this level. And especially, obviously, because, like, if you're good enough to make it to the NBA and you're good enough to be, like, a significantly, you know, a worthwhile scorer in the NBA, you were unbelievable growing up to the point where it didn't make any sense to do anything else but give you the ball and just let you decide whatever you want to do with it. I think a selling point now I feel like a used car salesman, like why should you want to play in the system? I think it is super fun when you get into it. Like that's how everyone that I know, like personally, and I would say 95% of the people I played basketball with or came across working in basketball that played, would agree that like this is the most fun way to play, like moving the ball a ton. Everyone's constantly in motion. You're always doing stuff off the ball for someone else. In a very decentralized offense, I think that's way, like, sure, it's not, it's a little bit less fun for the primary, maybe, who would prefer just like Trey, just like come off of high screen rolls all game. But for everyone else, it's way more fun. And I think, yes, we had this conversation a while ago, Max, with our good friend Andrew Kelly, of like why I don't like Trey at all as a long-term primary to invest in, is that issue. And I think that, yeah, it's not built for everybody. That's fine. I'm willing to acknowledge that it's not, this isn't the status quo. Like, it's not what people are used to, and it's not like what people, a lot of people were raised on. But we can't like let, we can't let like fears of, you know, interpersonal adaptability like shut down a philosophy of like, this is getting super meta, but like, if you're gonna like push innovation in basketball, eventually people are gonna get uncomfortable, and eventually people are like not gonna be used to it, and eventually people are gonna be like, this isn't gonna work, and you're gonna have to argue with them and tell them why it would work. And like, many times you can't prove it until you have the pudding. And unfortunately my pudding to this point is only like one D3 team, but that D3 team I wrote about in my first Exposing the Blueprint, like St. Joe's did this and the returns were unbelievable. So hopefully as people come, you know, become more comfortable to it, as I get better explaining it, as I get better sort of like selling it to people, then the people I talk to hopefully are more willing to adopt it. And sure, that's a hurdle with any sort of like quote unquote innovation, is like the reason it's innovation is because no one's doing it yet. So if everyone's really to like, willing and able to just do what they used to do, and that's all, that's fine, and sure, like we can do that, but I think that this is like one way of pushing past that. And so there are going to be hurdles, and you will run into players who aren't going to want to do this, but I'll kindly just tell them to like f off. Like, you kind of like, a certain point, I want just guys like, I want the guy anyway, to just like more reflective of other players and other basketball traits, that like, if you're not willing to, you know, sacrifice some on-ball touches because everyone's offensive rating is going to go up, then what the hell, why, what are you looking for? Like, I don't know, it's getting, this is getting super like out of hand, but point being is, yeah, not everyone's gonna like it. Many people probably think it's dumb, and people probably think it won't work and they don't want to be involved, but those aren't the people that will be on the first team that does this and wins a championship or whatever it may be. That's fine.
So in all honesty, you've hit on the, like, that last rant was the point that I think is ultimately the biggest hurdle. It's not the actual viability of the system, it's not how reasonable it is, because we've seen this, like we can say it's innovative and it hasn't been done before, but it has been done before. The Spurs did it, the Warriors did it. Like, those are two teams that have had massive successes in the past 10 years, and we can all agree that aesthetically and results wise like, that's peak basketball. The issues that I think, that as someone who's like played high school basketball, played on certain AAU teams with certain players who possess a lot of skill set, but just aren't mentally there to buy into a system like this. And maybe they don't have the mental and capabilities, honestly, and that's one thing, and that's a certain area to tackle. But I think the buy-in is something that's really interesting, and something that if I were a GM and I was going all in on this system, certain intel and certain interview questions would be so crucial to me, because I think buying in is such a vital aspect. And I think it's so easy once you see it works. And I think we saw that with the Warriors, is that Draymond can now look at everyone that comes after and say, yo, like, if you're not moving, like, you're the one who's killing us, because look at what we did when everyone was moving. That's the blueprint. And I think it's much easier once it's been done and you've been a part of it and you know it can work. But I do think there are certain hurdles that honestly go beyond basketball. And that's what I'm super fascinated in seeing where certain organizations go with this.
So, I mean, I should say too, this is a long overdue credit, but I get most of, if not all of these ideas from, Noah LaRoche, who's an NBA trainer who I've used to work for 4 years, like kind of been a mentor, and he is the one who's taught me a lot of the stuff. And Noah, in his his offseason, which is the NBA regular season. He's from New Hampshire. He comes out to LA to train in the summer. When he goes back, he would oftentimes, I don't know if he does anymore, but he would teach or coach like youth teams. And he would tell you all the time that like the best teams to run this stuff with is youth teams, because there's none of that. Like, and he would also tell me how like he would do it with, you know, 13U, 12U teams, and they'd come up against like the classic like AAU dominant, you know, 6'4" center in like AAU. And it's like, oh, that kid is getting recruited to the local like prep school, whatever, because they're all from the Northeast. And they would run those teams out of the gym with like a bunch of like random middle schoolers, because they would run the system and no one could keep up. And that's like, that's this Noah's favorite way of describing it. It's like, A, the best thing to do, or the best way to run it, is with kids. And B, that if you run it with kids, like the returns are always great. But also there is, you know, there is a certain level of like you said, Jake, I don't want to like sound cocky, but you can point to pretty similar situations like you outlined, like the Spurs and the Warriors. And I can just like flip on that tape and sit you down without saying anything and be like, what do you think of this basketball? Like, well, how does this offense look to you? And everybody who knows anything about anyone would be like, yeah, this looks great. And I'd be like, so why don't we all run it? Like, it works. Like, let's just do it. Like, that's, it's that easy. But then of course you get, you know, curmudgeons like Max who have plenty of questions. I'm kidding. But like there, it's fair to poke holes, but, and there, I think we've also in this conversation, Doug done a good job, digging into like what needs to happen in terms of from a T-billing perspective and what you need and kind of the viability of it and certain, pillars that are required. But I do think ultimately, like if you have the pillars in place and someone's not buying in, I would sit them down in a fill room and I would say, so watch what Steph Curry did. And why do you think Steph Curry is considered like one of the best point guards ever? Like, obviously it's a lot of talent, but like it's not happening if he's running the Damian Lillard type stuff. Like, it's just not happening that way. The reason he's considered one of the best point guards ever, at the level that he is and the way he changed basketball, is because of what they were doing. Like, that's just how it is. It's why Manu Ginobili is going to be a Hall of Famer after making two All-Star teams. It's why, you know, all of these, there's plenty of historical precedents. So ultimately that's like what I would do. I'd just be like, hey, this could be you if you could just suck it up and stop whining around pick and roll. But yeah, I think it's pretty easy after that.
I think that we should appoint Henry, PD, and like Eric Mobley to like this, to start the American Academy system and have all of the like elementary school kids playing basketball like this. And we're gonna teach ego-free basketball from the age of 5. And everyone is gonna be like a processing genius. And it'll be great. Basketball in 2040 will be really dope. Henry, I think you delivered a very good defense of this philosophy. Unless you guys want to go for like 4 hours, and since we did weave in a lot of the 2021 guys throughout this, Henry, are there any guys that you like very specifically want to touch on? Because we probably can't go through all of the guys that we have listed, and we've touched on so many of them already.
The wait is finally over. Football was in full effect and the NBA is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline. Your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, so the two guys that stand out most are Scottie Barnes. I'll start with Scottie. Just like the level of fuel in that body at 6'9" with a plus wingspan. I know that, you know, there's concerns about athleticism. There's concerns about shooting. I'm personally okay betting on the shooting to a certain extent. And then the processing is just so high level that level of thinking in that sort of frame is a little bit, you know, it's special. And so I think that's a specialty I see in him that is not maybe foreseen by whoever else. And that's one guy I would go to bat for. The other being David Johnson, who similarly, I think maybe underwhelms with sort of on-ball creation. And he did shoot a lot better this year, but historically not a great shooter. And there are, you know, natural concerns about that, being given that he's, you know, 6'5" and whatever. You'd hope for some more advantage creation out of that. But as someone who's making such quick decisions, reading the floor so well, really driving an offense without really ever having to touch the ball for more than 5 seconds of possession, those players are few and far between. And that's someone I'd also invest in. But then, you know, there's also the guys we kind of touched on throughout the episode, like Ochai Agbaji, I'm a big fan of for that reason. Deuce McBride, of course, Kessler. And at the top, you have guys like, you know, Moody, Springer, Franz, who are all fit that bill. But DJ and Scotty are like the two that stand out most of like, okay, I would really, in a war room, go to bat for these guys over a lot of people's, you know, foreseen guys that should go ahead of them just because I'm so ready to bank on that level of processing.
Yeah, I think if you're actually constructing offense like that, then I can totally get behind that. But I think that, you know, since so few NBA teams are playing like that, that's what I think comes into play with the projection there. It's like we agree on these evaluations. Like we both see Scotty Barnes and see a guy who can't jump, whose finishing is severely limited, who at the moment can't really shoot, yet undeniably, you know, incredibly intelligent player and processor and has some skills to unlock that and the functionality of his passing. But it's just a question of how is he going to be deployed that makes the projection so hard. Like the, you know, the evaluation relative to projection is a lot easier because, you know, it's evident how good a guy is at certain things that he's asked to do. And yeah, I think like these guys totally make sense if you were put in charge of building a team and building an offense.
And that is the key word and something I've talked about a lot with Jake recently. Is something I'll say again and again for myself, just speaking for myself, like if I ever publish, you know, any sort of value statements on like where I think a guy should be picked or like a ranking of any kind, like it's all done from the perspective whenever I'm doing it, it's all done from the perspective of like, what would I do if I was in the seat? Like if I'm making a decision, what's the decision I'm making? I'm never really in the business of like, I just think it's too hard. Like you said, Max, like it's way too hard for me to like sit down and be like, okay, well, you know, if he goes here, here, and here, this is what would happen. If he goes here, here, and here, this is what would happen. Like sitting down and like trying to project all of these things that I have no control over is worthwhile in a public sphere because it's content. You help people learn. And like when fans of teams tune in, like it helps them sort of foresee what they can expect and all of that. But I just don't, I'm like not in that business. So I just purely stick to what I would do. So it's an important distinction. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fully radicalized on the like abolish big boards thing. well, just because like I can tell you what skills a guy has, what he's good at, but I don't know how you're going to use him or what you're going to ask of him. And then, you know, Peyton Pritchard's a great example, like had a lot of limitations as a college primary, like really struggled to create advantages, really struggled to make decisions. Was a really poor on and off ball defender. Part of that is, you know, size and certainly you know, intelligence as a basketball player, but also, you know, energy that was then again stemming from that primary role. But if you can just isolate that Peyton Pritchard was an exceptional shooting prospect, something I definitely missed on because his shooting percentages were impacted by that primary role. If you can just isolate that and spot him up from 30 plus feet, you have a valuable player. And then especially if, you know, the other effects of his struggles as a primary are mitigated, right? That like, if you're relying on him to create fewer advantages and make fewer decisions with the ball in his hands, and he's expending less energy on offense, then you have this guy that isolating these skills, he's a really worthwhile player. But you wouldn't necessarily get that if you were projecting based on what you saw in college and just the fact that, you know, he's like a 6'1" guard. Those guys typically aren't deployed as like mega spacers or whatever. So yeah, I mean, I think that projecting is really tough and can't be done wholesale. Like it has to be done in a very specific context. And that would sort of, the projection changes your rankings a lot. Like if you tell me very specifically what you're going to ask of this player, then maybe you could perform a ranking, but just broad rankings don't make a lot of sense. And I'm sure if you were asked to do broad rankings, they would be very, very different from you evaluating these skills and how they fit into your, you know, preferred philosophy that we've been going over for a long time now.
Yeah. And one point I'll just add before we move on to the spotlight skills and conclude the show is I think it's kind of impossible, and it got hinted at before, but I think Tyrese Haliburton is the ultimate data point for this one, for me at least. I spent a lot of time overthinking what kind of role is he going to play, what team is he going to go to, what draft slot is reasonable. And ultimately, I was kind of rereading my older pieces, and after months and months of thinking and thousands of text messages corresponded, I wrote two sentences at the conclusion, and it's basically all it really boils down to is, if you're going to ask Tyrese Haliburton to be an off-ball linking player, then sure, go for it. Take him however high you want, because he's absolutely going to excel there. If you're relying on him as your point guard and the role he played at Iowa State his sophomore year, then I'm not really sure I would even touch that in the lottery. And he is next to De'Aaron Fox, which is a dreamlike scenario for him, for being alongside someone who can win so easily in the half court with that burst of speed, and just playing off of him and making positive decisions, drawing closeouts, attacking closeouts, and just doing all the little things that we knew he was capable of, but was clearly overextended at Iowa State. Yeah, on my broad board, looking back on it, I will have had him way too low, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I whiffed on the evaluation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I couldn't bring myself to try and like guess how people will be seen and used and all that stuff. It's just too hard. Like I would rather just be able to, cause you know, ultimately, like if you're doing this for a living, depending on like how you're doing it, but like if you're working for a team, like your job with the team is like to rank the players in the order you would take them, cause you're the ones making the decision. So like, that's how I view a big board. Like if I'm going to put out a big board, it's because I'm on the clock. I'm just Xing out players at a certain point. And like, once I've like, you know, Xed out everyone by in front of a certain guy, the guy at the highest is just like who I'd probably take. That's how I would do it. But yeah, I think there's, like I said, there's value to the other side too. It's just a lot harder and just not something I can do.
All right. I think that will do it for the main discussion. That was a lot of fun. Henry, did you have any spotlight skill guys you wanted to get into?
I did.
Or do you want to go last?
No, I mean, I can go now. It's pretty quick. I was, this past week, I was watching James Booknight, I think is an interesting sort of data point in this, discussion too, of like drafting guys you would take and use versus like projecting how guys will be in the NBA. Cause I'm not a huge Booknight, you know, investor personally, but can see him being successful in other ways. But what definitely stood out to me is his tight space body control. It's really something that will like fully buoy him. If you are in the business of projecting outcomes and trying to like order a big board in terms of how you think looking back it will look, Booknight's someone to potentially bet on at a certain point because of his, whether or not the shooting comes around fully. He didn't have a great efficiency year, but pretty low sample size and pretty high degree of difficulty. His ability to attack closeouts. And then, at UConn, he was like the only guy that required any sort of offensive attention or defensive attention, apart from like RJ Cole sometimes. So what you got was like a lot of these situations where Booknight's coming off of like weave actions or DHOs and going into like a crowded key. And he maneuvered them in a way that was always surprising to me, like very good at reading like movement patterns and then readjusting himself and like stopping and starting in tight spaces in terms of adjusting like hop step lengths, which is like something that's very difficult to do and very impressive and a very translatable skill in terms of like how he will be able to finish around bigger bodies and in the NBA. So just something that really stuck out to me is like, okay, James Booknight, whether or not, you know, depending on your evaluation of him, depends on a lot of things, but like, I think at the very least, he's going to stick to an extent unless he really can't shoot, because he's always going to be able to like really take advantage of closeouts in a way that not a lot of guys can.
Yeah, his tight space body control is wild. It produces the effect of the like he really is walking in air. He maneuvers his body in the air in tight spaces in a way that shouldn't be possible when you're not on the ground, because he has such unique control over it, which leads to some like incredible body control and extension finishes. He's certainly very, very skilled on the interior as a scorer.
I've mentioned it on this pod before, I think, but the clip is on my Twitter somewhere when I was going through the binge while I was writing about him. He has had one of the crazier finishes that I've ever seen, honestly. He was on a fast break and was going for like a reverse, like up and under kind of finish, and contorted his body to get around the defense, and then had the ball stripped from him in midair, regained the ball, and was able to flip it up for an and one. And just, you guys talked about the hang time or the body control. I do want to bring up like his hang time as well, and how the two work in conjunction with each other just to make for these wild circus finishes that he makes look way too easy. How he's able to get there and arrive at the rim, that's sort of a different conversation. But when he does have the time and space to clear for takeoff, it's really entertaining.
He would be very good at Twister. That's my tank book and body control analysis.
Jake, did you have anyone?
Yeah, so I feel like this fits right into everything we're talking about all day. Joel Ayayi, I have his cutting and off-ball movement in general as a huge spotlight skill. He was very crucial in Gonzaga's offense, and I think was probably the most underrated key contributor. Just sort of did his thing quietly all year. Nothing he does is super flashy. It doesn't get a ton of on-ball pick and roll reps, but he absolutely makes the most of every little window. And he is just in an admirable habit of every time there's a pick and roll, where he is not necessarily getting a wide open shake, catch and shoot look, he's cutting to the basket. And he's basically the epitome of cutting creates spacing. It's somewhat counterintuitive, and I think some people are like refrain from actually buying into that theory, but there are countless times in one single game that I watched where Ayayi will cut and he won't get the ball, but he'll draw a tag from someone else that will result in a catch and shoot three for a teammate. And again, it sort of goes along with the unorthodox way of thinking that we've been talking about and the off-ball democratic movement principles. But yeah, I definitely want to highlight Ayayi's cutting and off-ball activity, because some of the most impressive cuts and relocations for him are ones where he doesn't necessarily even get the ball, so it's impossible for it to show up in the box score, but the impact is absolutely there.
Yeah. Ayayi is, this is something that I had written in the outline, but didn't touch on, but I've touched on in many other, if you really want to listen to me talk about it for an hour, you can go to the Sense and Scalability podcast that I was on. But it is the idea that you can create spacing without shooting sometimes, and cutting is a great way to do that. And Ayayi is like the absolute pinnacle in this year's class of a guy that like totally excels and created so many looks for shooters and for other guys, because ultimately you create spacing by commanding gravity, and a great way to command gravity is by doing something that requires everybody to pay attention to you at the same time. Of course, if you're a shooter, just standing there requires that, but cutting, if you're not a shooter, is an amazing way of doing that as well. And Ayayi is so good at timing that. I'm glad you brought that up, Jake.
Yeah, that team had a lot of guys who were really good cutters who, you know, the timing on their cuts was excellent. And yeah, like Jake mentioned, not just cuts that end in, you know, layups, but cuts that are creating advantages for other people. And Ayayi, I think, was certainly the best at it. Like he was a really exceptional cutter for that team and very central to what they did, in a way that's fitting to what we've been talking about today. So I have a couple. The first is I think not in line with Henry's philosophy. Sandro Mamukelashvili's role this year with Seton Hall was pretty hilarious. He was just like this absolute mega creator who did everything, like post touches, pick and roll ball handler, pick and roll man. He was just doing everything. Really insane role, very overextended. I think that if we're to do an episode on insane roles or like draft your film that's very unrepresentative, I think that Sandra this year would definitely fit. he was asked to do a lot. I would say too much. The other guy, unless you guys have anything to add on Sandro, Josh Giddey. So I'm stealing this, I think, from PD, maybe from Henry. Am I stealing it from you, Henry?
No, it's PD was the one that covered it a lot in the breakdown, but it's something we had both talked about in the sort of lead up to our stream. So I'll take some credit for it, but not all of it.
Obviously, Henry referencing the really awesome live stream that he and PD did on Twitch. We can talk about it a little bit more at the end with stuff to plug, because it was really cool and a very inventive thing to do and very well executed. But yeah, Josh Giddey, we're talking about Josh Giddey's advantage perception. So this is, PD introduced me to the term because it was kind of looking for something to explain how Josh Giddey sees the floor. That, and there are multiple things that this encompasses. So it's like before any action even starts, whether it's in semi-transition or just outright in the half court, Josh Giddey's view of the entire court is such that he is seeing every single potential crease that opens. So if it's semi-transition and something as simple as like the guy in the opposite corner is not picked up, like he is throwing that skip, or if he's running a pick and roll and the low man, like before he even takes a dribble, the low man in the weak side corner is pre-rotating over to the help line, he's skipping it to the weak side corner. It's that sort of thing, but it's also that when he's running a pick and roll, that he's feeling where his teammates are and where the defenders are, so that if he snakes this and you know, his roll man is able to roll into open space with no one in the corner, that these rotations are going to have to come so that this kick out to the opposite wing is open. Like he's seeing all of this at a really unique level, just his understanding of one, how the entire court is set up, and then two, where to get on the court so that the geometry is like as he wants it, is really unique. And I think a demonstration of some pretty exceptional feel.
Yeah, I think you did a really good job explaining it, Max. The one thing I would add, which is so impressive with him, like there's tiers to it, and he is just on another plane because of this, is like, he does it without the ball. Like he's so good at hockey assists and like the most like quote unquote mundane things, but he can see like 9 steps ahead in the play. So what I mean by this is, you know, Max described all the situations where he has the ball in his hands and he knows that he'll do something that will cause a reaction that he can exploit. And he knows that the end result is going to be the same. Like he can foresee the end result and he knows how to get there and force that result. And then he knows how to exploit that end result. But beyond that, he can also like, he can see things 2 passes ahead. So like he'll be at the top of the key and make a simple, like, look off swing pass, because he knows that that swing pass only means like all he needs is like 1 more swing and then it's an open corner 3. Or he'll do like my favorite play from the breakdown that we did that I actually didn't get to talk about in the actual stream, but there's a play where he's taking the ball out of bounds on the baseline and he throws like a half-ass pass lobbed up to like a classic sort of like baseline out of bounds, like cop out play, lobs it out. And then no one attaches to him, so he just jumps in at the block and he knows he's not getting the ball, but he knows that someone has to respond to him jumping at the block and opens up a wide open 3. Like the processing is so crazy, and just in terms of like, oh, if I do this, this will happen and that'll happen. Like no one's thinking the game that fast, it's just way too hard. But he is, and he creates so many looks without even like touching the ball sometimes, that it's so valuable to have someone like that on your team.
Yeah, we've talked about that with David Johnson before, that he makes a lot of simple passes where it's just like him moving his body around the court is the pressuring the defense.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things in basketball, honestly, maybe I'm biased because I feel like I did this a lot when I like used to play basketball, is when you make a simple swing pass and then immediately, like, I wish for this one, I wish we had video, but like I'll visualize, like you make your simple swing pass and you point and you're pointing like to the corner, like one more. And like Giddy excels there. David Johnson excels there. And it's just like, look, I see this pass. I can't make it because I don't have the angle, but I know exactly where the ball needs to go. And I remember Halley doing it a bunch last year as well. I think that's probably the ultimate, one of the more telling signals of processing speed is, look, like, I'm not just like, I know I can't get this pass through, but I know what needs to get done. And I think when I see that, like, that was probably one of the more fun things to see on film. And another thing that I talked about, like, in my processing speed piece before I wrote before the season started, is like this idea of off-ball passing and reading the defense before the ball gets to you. And that's what I love from Giddy, is I think where he absolutely excels and why I can be a little bit more optimistic about his NBA role, is that he is 6'9", and he can go off the ball a little bit. And he absolutely is off the charts reading the defense before the ball gets to him. And he knows exactly where he's going to go with it before he touches it. And one play that's super telling to me is in a typical ball screen continuity, usually you run your pick and roll and you just hit the bailout, swing back to the wing. Like, usually that's a sign of, okay, that didn't work. They shut down that action. We're regrouping. But no, Giddy is going to still hit the roller for this delayed no look, like frozen rope on a zip from the wing. And like, that's just the little things that you can't really teach, and it's either there or it's not. And it's really fun when you see it on film.
Yeah. With Giddy, it's just super fun too, because he has all these like childish mannerisms. If you watch his games, like, he'll oftentimes, it's a podcast, so you can't see me, but he'll run around like with two hands in front of his face, just constantly asking for the ball. So he'll like, that then morphs into, like you described, Jake, of there are moments where he'll swing it and then it'll be like, you can see his eyes light up and his arms start moving. And it's like, he's pointing for where he wants the ball to go. Like, there's a play that me and PD did cover in the stream where he looks off. He's like, in a pick and roll that stagnates and he looks off Jack White on the wing and throws the ball to the corner. And the guy in the corner just throws in an immediate sort of like delayed entry pass on the roller who's wide open. And the second he whips the ball to the corner, you can see him like get a little like, oh, like pointing towards the roll man. It's really funny. But yeah, Josh Giddey is lovable. That's the point of the quote.
Yeah. In the spirit of the breakdown you guys did, like my advice when watching some Josh Giddey, because I think that all of the NBL games are available on Twitch for anyone who wants to watch them and would recommend, they're a lot of fun. Watch how many, like it might look simple, but watch how often Josh Giddey is putting his teammates in advantage situations or in just positions to score outright. That I think is like the end result of what we're talking about, is that he is constantly putting his teammates in advantage situations or scoring position in ways that look really easy.
Yeah, completely. Oftentimes they'll end up with nothing. Like oftentimes there'll be plays where he'll throw a pass and it's because he knows that something can come of it, but that guy who has the ball on doesn't see the pass, so it just looks like nothing. But if you're really tuned into it, you can kind of notice when those are, and it's super fun.
Because it's a weak link philosophy. Exactly. And that brings us full circle, I think. Unless you guys have anything to add, this is going to end up being part two because we went super long. But hopefully you guys enjoy listening. This, we're really glad to have Henry on. Henry, we can follow you at Henry W. Ward on Twitter.
Correct.
Yeah. And I'll also add to check out the recording of the stream that Henry did with PD. So PD did the first edition where he's going to be live breaking down some film on Twitch. And Henry was the first guest, which was a very smart decision because as you guys have heard, Henry is really smart. And articulate and does well on the spot defending his philosophy. So they did that stream on Twitch. It was really, really exceptional. PD had been putting a ton of work on it. Henry had been putting in a ton of work on it. The final product was really amazing. It's a really innovative and new piece of content in basketball in general, I think, but certainly in the draft space. I would highly recommend watching it because it's fun and cool, and you get to see or hear two really, really smart people talking about basketball and talking about Josh Giddey, which is a good time. So check that out for sure. You can follow me at Max A. Carlin. You can follow Jake at Jake in the Paint, and you can follow the pod at Prep2ProPod. Anything to add, gentlemen?
Thank you, Max. I will add
the very kind words. No, go ahead, Jake.
No, I will add. I can't seem to quite get rid of Henry. I have to talk with him again about basketball stuff this Wednesday on the Locker Room app. We've done two so far. I've had a ton of fun with them. It's been awesome seeing people in the comments, feeding us questions, interacting. And of course, those recordings will be available after on my Twitter. So if you can't tune in live, no worries. So yeah, definitely check those out as well.
Yeah, just want to say quick thanks to both you guys for having me on. Thank you very much for the praise, Max. This stream was a lot of fun. Hopefully we get to do a couple more in the future. Other than that, yeah, nothing to plug except for me and Jake's Locker Room Show, which is always a ton of fun. We'll actually have, I don't know when you guys plan on publishing this, but should be, I have another 5-point play coming out on Friday. So hopefully that is coincides well with the pod release. There's going to be basically two more of those. I was doing them weekly during the season, but obviously not as much to cover when no one's playing, but going to do like a couple draft preppy ones this week and next. So it should be fun, but yeah, thanks guys.
Thank you, Henry.
All right.
Jake, do you want to record an extra intro and outro right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to
outro then intro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just now or another file?
I'm going to do another file.
All right, cool.